and welcome back to the 6th Annual Annapolis Political Summit, brought to you by Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Also be broadcast later on Delmarva Public Radio, our sister station on the Eastern Shore. My name is Mark Steiner. We're broadcasting today from Phillips Seafood Restaurant here in downtown Annapolis. Today is the beginning of the 426th legislative session. And 3 months for the Maryland General Assembly, we'll be debating the issues in this very tight fiscal time that we are facing. This event today is made possible by the generous sponsorship from the Maryland State Teachers Association, that are the backbone and reason why that we are the number one school system in the United States of America.
Hear, hear.
If it wasn't for teachers, it wouldn't be happening. And our other partnering organizations are, as I said, WEA 80.9 FM, the Maryland ACLU, and the Maryland Healthcare for All Coalition. With the help of all these groups, we brought together an audience to listen, ask questions, be part of the political process today. And you have a chance in the second part of this hour to ask all the questions you'd like of the governor of the state of Maryland. And we have a line already forming there behind the mics. So we'll try to get maybe a little earlier to get your questions here in the air for the governor. And joining me here for the next hour is the governor of the state of Maryland, Martin O'Malley. Welcome. Good to have you with us.
Mark, it's great to be with you again.
One very quick question, and then we'll move on to real serious matters facing the state. The Sun has put rumors out there that Martin O'Malley is really a Pittsburgh Steelers fan and not a Baltimore Ravens fan. So now we have to clear this up, Martin. This has to get cleared up. I think the very first thing we have to do is that.
And this is what happens when one is in, when one is in public life, and especially with internets and blogs the way they are today, people feel like with impunity, they can take any shot they want at you, and you have no opportunity to respond. And usually what they do is they focus on a single kernel of truth, and then they weave this huge falsehood all around it. So, Mark, I'm really glad you brought that up, and let me respond. My father was from Pittsburgh. Growing up in the Washington area, as a little boy in a small log cabin Kettler brother home, I, in fact, had two loyalties at that time in the Washington area. One was to the Washington Redskins, the time of the dueling quarterbacks, Billy Kilmer, Sonny Jurgensen. And in addition to wearing my maroon and gold, I do confess that my father sometimes had us adorned as he dropped us off at Our Lady of Lourdes in Bethesda in the black and gold of Pittsburgh. And my brother and I used to get beaten up very often. Now, when I became a man, I left aside boyhood things. I moved to the land of the free, the home of the brave, to Baltimore, the people that Johnny Unitas and Frederick Douglass loved. And I have been a diehard Ravens fan ever since. If you go by State Circle right now, you will see, for I believe the first time in Maryland history, that Government House, where all of you are kind enough to allow my family and me to stay, Government House is now flooded in a purple floodlight in anticipation of the Super Bowl.
All right.
And this is true. This is true. I don't want to belabor this a lot more. I know we have less serious issues to get to. But I have been in intense negotiations with Speaker Bush and President Miller. I think we have the votes we need in the House to light up the State House dome purple. But unfortunately, we're being thwarted by President Miller, who just always wants to have his way. So I'd appreciate any letter-writing campaign you can do. He's very sensitive. Put this in your letter. I know you're sensitive that the upcoming Wednesday is the anniversary of the Treaty of Paris. But after that, for crying out loud, couldn't we light up the State House dome purple? So there we go. I'm rooting for the Ravens.
All right. I think we had to clear that up first. Don't you think that was an important thing to do? There are a lot of issues facing the state of Maryland. And we know we're facing a huge fiscal crisis, that we're in this national recession, 7.2% unemployment as of last week, and people expect it to grow and not to drop very much. Foreclosures are happening in the state of Maryland. This budget you're about to deliver has to be full of some very serious cuts. 40% of our budget goes to localities. We've talked from our legislative leaders who are saying they could lose as much as 10%. of that money, which is a huge cut. The environment, healthcare for all, university tuition. There are a lot of things on the table here. So I know that you can't talk completely about what you're about to deliver to the state legislature in a couple of weeks, but can you give us an inkling and understanding of what direction you're going in terms of the tough decisions you're going to have to pose to the legislature and the people of Maryland about what we're going to have to face over the next year?
Sure. I will do my best. As the one generalist in the family, I think I can say with assurance that I'm probably the only person in the government that can is incapable of talking fully about any one subject. But let me give you sort of the broad parameters. All of those things that you outlined, Mark, are true. We are facing a big challenge, and it's primarily brought about by the national economic downturn, by the recession that we're in the middle of, hopefully, maybe even coming out. Who can predict? No one knows whether this is going to last two more months before we reach bottom or two more years. Having said that, our goals remain the same. When Lieutenant Governor Brown and I campaigned when we were sworn into office, our goals that we had are the same goals we have today, which is to strengthen, defend, and hopefully grow the ranks of an upwardly mobile middle class in our state, to improve public safety and public education in every part of our state, and to expand opportunity. Opportunity not only to learn to all children, but the opportunities to earn to all parents, and the opportunity to enjoy the health of the people that we love and the health of this environment that we love to more people rather than fewer. When we look at this year's budget, after having already cut about $2.2 billion over these last 2 years in cuts and spending reductions, we have to now go back. Even after the difficult choices on revenues and those cuts last year, we now have to make adjustments for the contraction in the economy, and therefore the revenues that follow that down as well. It's about a $1.9 billion mathematical exercise on approximately a $14 billion base. So it's going to be very, very difficult. Our parameters as we look at this, Mark, is keeping in mind that our goals are the same. In every cut that we examine, the Lieutenant Governor and I ask ourselves, how does this affect our ability to protect Maryland families during these tough economic times? And number two, how does this allow us to protect our very strengths like education and affordable higher education that are the reasons why we have one of the lower unemployment rates of any state in the country, and that is also the reason why we're going to come out of this recession more quickly than other states? So the conclusion to all of this is that, broadly speaking, there will be very, very few items that see any increase whatsoever.
What will they be? Do you know what they will be?
Even for inflation. One of them will be education. Another one, if we are successful, will be affordable college. We've moved from 3 years ago, I think we were 28th on the list of the 50 best values. Now we're back up to 9th. In the country, we were the 6th most expensive. Now we're back down to 16. We still have a ways to go. So education will increase. Health will increase in part because of the additional numbers of people that are applying for coverage as they become dislocated and unemployed. Those sort of safety net things that protect people in this downward economy, those things will increase. Virtually everything else will either be cut or at best level funded. And when 85% of your state budget, and it's your state, I just run it in trust for brief periods of time, when 85% of your state budget is public safety, public education, or public health, it's impossible to make those sorts of cuts without in some way affecting those things. When it comes to local aid, when 40% of those dollars are in formulas that go to the counties, it's going to be impossible to make that magnitude of the 1.9 cuts on a $14 billion base without affecting local aid. Something we chose not to do, which was the right and responsible thing, Mark, when the reason for our structural deficit, which was building for years, was in essence the product of bad decisions made at the state level. It didn't seem chivalrous, right, or honorable to tell the counties that they needed to pay that bill. So we took care of that without asking the counties, for the most part, to share in that. But this is something we're all going to have to share in. And you know what? When we come out of it sooner than other states, we're all going to share in the benefit of that.
So let's talk about some of the issues of what you can and cannot do as governor of the state of Maryland. And I just want to tell the folks who have lined up at the mic, by the way, that I'm going to go earlier rather than waiting until halfway through to let some of you start speaking in between my questions, since so many of you have questions for the governor. I want to get as many in as possible during the course of this hour with Governor Martin O'Malley in our sixth annual political summit in Annapolis. Over 50,000 households in Maryland have lost their homes because of foreclosure. That could happen again in 2009. We are not recession-proof. The unemployment rate is lower in some regards because we have so many federal employees in the state of Maryland that always makes our picture look a little rosier. But it's not a rosy situation. And that in the latest poll, 55% of the people feel that they have been drastically affected one way or another in the Gonzales poll by this economy. So what can the state realistically do to stem foreclosures, to keep people in their homes? Can the state of Maryland put a moratorium on foreclosures? Is that possible?
Here's the challenge with the moratorium. Challenge with the moratorium is, I suppose, one could do that for a period of time, and in essence, that's what we did by operation of law in the last session when the Washington Post said that Maryland passed some of the most sweeping foreclosure prevention legislation of any state in the union. For we knew that if we did away with the historic fast track to foreclosure in the state of Maryland, that we could buy people some more time. And the two things that you need when you're in danger of losing your family's home are time and money. So that additional amount of time gave a number of families the opportunity then to sit down with the nonprofit housing counselors, which all of our state tax dollars funded. We have a lot more nonprofit housing counselors, and they're overwhelmed and they're doing, yeoman's work. And so that gave people some more time. I cannot wait until our new president and his cabinet actually take office so we can work more, go to the next level on this foreclosure prevention. The biggest impediment that we have right now is either the unwillingness or the inability, because they've never been staffed for this sort of volume of renegotiations. It's either the inability or the unwillingness of mortgage companies, mortgage servicing companies, to renegotiate with people who actually might be able to stay in their homes if you could adjust those payments and maybe keep the floating arm, or maybe we should call it the swinging arm.
Can Maryland force that issue with them, or is that something that can only be done by the federal government?
Yeah, well, I think we're going to need federal help. These are national companies. Now, we have been doing some of it, and Tom Perez and Secretary Skinner of our Department of Labor and Department of Housing, respectively, have done a very good job of getting a number of mortgage servicing companies to sign agreements saying that they will participate in helping to work these things out, that here are the broad parameters so your nonprofit housing counselors know who can be saved, who absolutely cannot be saved, and then people can go on to Plan B. There are some companies, though, notably Wells Fargo, who has been one of the worst corporate citizens that we've had to deal with.
They're a big bank in Maryland. They just bought out, was it M&T? Who did they buy out? Am I right about that? Wachovia, excuse me. Thank you very much. I needed that help today.
So they have a big presence here. We do have a banking commissioner, but there are not a lot of Maryland banks, our ability to really control them. We do regulate, however, mortgage servicing companies and the like. So we have a little bit more oversight authority, power over some of the mortgage companies than other states do. But having said that, nobody has the power that the state government does. And they've been kind of chasing their tail in Washington for the last year and a half, because part of the rules of the road under President Bush is that thou shalt not regulate business. So if thou shalt not regulate business as part of the rules of the road, then they're only able to do things sort of around the perimeter of the problem, Come on, Obama.
So let me ask you another place where you do have huge discretion. The largest discretionary part of the budget, if I'm correct, is in higher education. And there's a panel run by Delegate Bohannon of St. Mary's County that recommended a $760 million increase for higher education in the state of Maryland. That, at this point, is probably not going to happen, I would imagine, given the crisis we're in. But it does beg the question, will there be any increase for higher education, A, and B, with all the people in the state of Maryland trying to put their children now in state colleges because you can't afford to go anywhere else.
Right.
The thing you fought for years, you're up against again, which is an increase in tuition for state colleges. So talk a bit about that.
Sure. We did not become one of the more expensive states for when it comes to college education for in-state kids overnight. It did happen pretty darn quick, though. It happened over about 3 years' period of time. We went from affordability to number six in the country in terms of most expensive. So we have been working overtime to hold the line, 0% increase in tuition. We're now in our third year of that. I believe we need to do it at least for another year and maybe another year after that.
But how do you do that given what we're facing? How do you keep it at zero?
And that's what makes this all so exciting. I don't know. this is an approach that we haven't taken. First of all, there's let me just say very briefly, there are decent people on both sides of the issue of how you fund higher education. There are some, like the past administration, who believe that college should be like a user fee sort of thing, like a toll road, and that those that are going should pay a much fuller part of the freight. Lieutenant Governor Brown and I believe that higher education is one of the best tools we have for expanding opportunity to more people and increasing the average earnings of families throughout our state. So we believe that that is a collective economic investment. And therefore, we are very proud when the Milken Institute says no state does a better job than Maryland does in terms of investing in education as well as higher education, the skills and talents of our people. The question is... there's nothing, whether it's a cup of coffee, whether it's this pen, whose price remains static over time. So there will no doubt come a time when college tuitions need to keep pace with the rate of inflation and the cost of living for the professors and everything else that goes into that endeavor. And the Bohannon Commission, I think, did a very good job of trying to identify what is the benchmark for access and affordability. And as we looked at some of those, for instance, when we looked at some of the tax issues last session, when you have the 42nd lowest sales tax in the country, well, then that says that that's one that maybe we need to modernize because it's not competitive, and we would not become uncompetitive if we were to raise it by a penny, especially if it allowed us to invest in education. So the question now is, what is the benchmark? Who is our peer set? Who are our competitors? And the Bohannon Commission did a good job of looking at surrounding states, beginning with this crescent, the Chesapeake Crescent, so our neighbors in Virginia, and then Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Massachusetts, even California, New York. And it set funding of public four-year institutions with the goal of trying to achieve that funding at 75th percentile of funding per student on a group. Anyway, big formula. So the question, once we get back to what percentage of this should be reasonably shouldered on the backs of students and their families, and what portion should we invest in, then I think we can come up with a better agreement for moving forward. In the here and now, Mark, the price tag of doing another year with 0% increase in college tuition for in-state kids is roughly $25 to $30 million. And that will probably be one of those short list of very few things that we'll see an increase this year. We also hope to re-up what became the first dedicated source of funding last year in the session, which was the Higher Education Investment Fund. It's due to sunset, and we intend to renew that and continue to be the only state in the union with a dedicated source of funding for higher education.
As I said here, as we talking to Governor Martin O'Malley at in Annapolis for the 6th Annual Political Summit, Annapolis Political Summit, that we're going to open the microphones early before we go to break as opposed to after break, so all the citizens lined up have a chance to talk to their governor. Let me just say at some point during this, I may have to skip one person up only because he represents our sister station, and we promised them since they're partnering with us to allow them to get a question in. That's Tom Rush. So other than that, we're going to stay in line and have you ask your question. But, sir, you're first in line, so why don't you come up, identify yourself, and... bring your question to the table.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Governor. Good morning, Mr. Steiner. My name is Barry Potts. I'm a teacher in Carroll County, presently president of the Carroll County Education Association, representing over 2,200 teachers, and a member of the MSTA Board of Directors. As mentioned, we were just ranked number one in the country as a top school, public school system. And one of the big reasons was the fact that you've supported the school system so well with the investment to make sure we have quality teachers and we retain quality teachers and staff. One big idea that's been footed is the shifting of the state's cost of funding of teacher pensions to the local governments, which are already strapped for cash. Wouldn't this lead to the cutbacks in the school funding at the local level that has been critical in achieving our number one ranking?
It would, if we were to cut that back, it would not, some would argue, if the counties were asked to pay a portion of that moving forward. There's a couple areas, Mark, where our state participates in education beyond the huge, massive amount, and this year it'll be a record amount, the $5.3 billion, or the dollars that go in direct aid to the local county boards. Two areas where most states, where many states do not participate at all. One of them is school construction. The other is their teacher pensions. In our state, the state foots the entire bill for all of the teacher pension systems, even though we have no responsibility for negotiating individual teacher contracts in the 24 jurisdiction, namely 23 counties and the city of Baltimore. I am doing my best to continue to keep faith and cover the costs of those teacher pensions. I think that is a big part of the reason why we are number one, but it's also a hidden investment. And when senators and delegates get beaten up for the tough choices and people don't realize that when they drop their child off to a county school that the state is covering, you know, their third grade teacher's pension costs, that the state is covering 40, 55, 60% of the operating costs, and P.S., the state was responsible for half of the school construction that went into that building, it can become very politically frustrating in Annapolis for delegates that look at that and feel like, wow, the county should pay that.
So what was just raised by Mr. Potts from the MSTA, are the pensions and health care of teachers and state employees in jeopardy now? Are they going to be cut? Are people going to see their retirement cut?
There's a perennial question in Annapolis all the time. For the last 2 years, we debated. There are many legislators who believe that that's a cost that should be shared by the counties. I am working on ways and been in substantive conversations with the comptroller's office to find a way that we can cover the pension costs for our teachers. And been also talking with MACO about that as well. So we have to make the payments. Now, you ask, are they in jeopardy? Over the long term, there is an unfunded liability, as there is in every state.
Right.
We do a much better job of keeping pace with that responsibility than other states. But it's a challenge and it's a pressure, and I'm working as hard as I can not to shove this off, you know, summarily on anyone. We will find a way to keep faith with the teachers and to honor our responsibilities, county and state, together to, make those payments into the pension system. And the counties are struggling right now, too. I mean, their revenues are all going down as well, which is why they're not able to negotiate higher contracts with the teachers that they'd like to be able to negotiate.
Thank you for saying.
Thank you very much.
So stay tuned. I didn't mean to be.
No.
I'm working hard not to create a pickup stick situation on that. Okay?
We have faith in you.
It'll be done orderly and responsibly. And I think you'll be pleased in the short term, and over the long term, we'll come out of this recession. We'll all be pleased.
Before we go to break here, I guess one question before we go to break.
I got to be shorter my answers, don't I? If I'm going to hear from my bosses.
Hi, my name is Maja Cox, and I'm a freshman from Baltimore Freedom Academy. Some of the things we demonstrate at my school is pride, which stands for professionalism, respect, initiative, determination, and enthusiasm. And I just want to thank you for inviting us. I don't think that young adults get to speak enough about issues we feel need to be addressed, so we really do appreciate you inviting us.
It's our pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, thank you for being
thank
here.
Thank you.
Did Steiner give you a note for school, or what's the deal on that?
Some of the questions I have is, what plans do you have on how funds will be spent on schools and how the state budget addresses the different needs of schools in different counties?
Sure. That's a let me give you the short answer. And our state invests a tremendous amount of money in education, public education, from pre-kindergarten all the way through college. It's probably about 48% of your state general fund tax dollar, I do believe, if you add it all together. When it comes to elementary and high school education, the primary way of distributing those funds is through the Thornton sort of base aid formula, which we have increased as a people. Over 6 years period of time, we've increased the state investment in primary and elementary and high school education by 82% over about a 6 or 7 year period of time. Now, say it with me, people. 82%. That's a big percent. And it is because of that investment that we have had many of the other problems go by the names of shortfalls, deficits, structural deficits. It's why we had to make so many tough and unpopular choices, because we wanted to have the number one public school system in the country. So we also make big investments in school construction. This year we'll probably top $1 billion, which is the first time in our state's history that any administration's done $1 billion, I think even in a four-year term, let alone in the first 3 years of their term. And the other place where the gentleman from Carroll County was just speaking was teacher pension. So there is a great report that's online on the MSDE, Department of Education website, on a consultant's review of the investments that all of us have made in education. And it shows that we're actually getting a return for that dollar, with our kids being the number one public school system in America. So go back and tell your friends. All of us appreciate what you're doing, because you know what? We're going to be depending on you to make sure you take care of us in our old age, which is rapidly approaching.
Thank you. I really do appreciate that.
It's a pleasure to have you all here from Baltimore Freedom Academy. It's an honor to have you in the audience with us. Folks, we're going to take a very short break. Do not go away. We'll be right back with more with Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley. You're listening to the 6th Annual Annapolis Political Summit, brought to you by Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, coming to you live from Phillips Seafood Restaurant in Annapolis, and made possible through a generous sponsorship by the Maryland State Teachers Association. Stay with us. We'll be right back for more of our audience questions for Governor Martin O'Malley. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back to the 6th Annual Annapolis Political Summit, brought to you by Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner, and we're broadcasting today from Phillips Seafood Restaurant in downtown Annapolis. The Maryland General Assembly goes back into session today. This is the annual event we have with these legislative leaders and our governor to talk with our lawmakers about what we face in this current economic crisis. It is in front of a live audience here at Phillips Seafood Restaurant, and it is made possible with the generous support of the Maryland State Teachers Association and our other partners who brought many people here today, Healthcare for All and Maryland ACLU, we're glad to have so many people in the audience here. This is the largest turnout we have ever had for the 6th Annual Political Summit, which will be heard on WEAA and heard on WSCL the Eastern Shore, our sister station there, as well as being heard by other public radio stations around the state. So Governor Martin O'Malley is with us, and as I promised, we are going to start immediately with questions from the floor. And after this question, I'm going to ask our colleague Don Rush to come up so he can ask his question. Then we'll get back to the lineup. But why don't you ask your question, Don, and then we'll go back to the audience. Don Rush is from our sister station, Delmarva Public Radio.
That's right. Governor, earlier this morning, your colleagues, both the Speaker and the President of the Senate, seemed to be indicating that they were relying to a large extent on the federal government and stimulus package and sort of a bailout for state governments. How significant is that federal assistance or that spending to the state in terms of how much you're going to have to cut? I mean, have you sat down and said, okay, we need X dollars, or we expect this, and what kinds of projects is that money going to go to? Do you think that'll ultimately then help the local governments?
Sure. It is a big part of our consideration in the things that we're talking about, and it's also a huge variable. It is not ordained that the Reinvestment and Recovery Act that we've been hearing President Obama speak about will necessarily pass right away. I think eventually it will. There's no guarantee that it will pass before we have to vote on this budget. So let's not forget, you know, for any of us who elected and voted for Barack Obama, our vote did not give him a magic wand, and this stuff is tough, and so we need to stay behind him to get this done. There are really kind of two big categories under which President Obama talks about reinvestment and recovery. One of them that has gotten the greatest amount of coverage is the construction projects for bridges, roads, infrastructure, things that since we're borrowing from our kids, wouldn't it be nice as we stimulate our economy to be able to leave something for them to enjoy for the dollars we're borrowing from them? The other part of it, though, is direct aid to states who are the mechanism for delivering the increased amount of services that many displaced families are calling upon the state to deliver in this time of unemployment and downturn. So the question in terms of our budget choices and how this affects our operating budget choices, right, putting aside for a second the big capital construction things that we need, and we're looking forward to having our federal partner being a partner in once again, it really depends on how much of that comes. The primary source of that, the primary sort of trade route of federal dollars into states will be what is referred to as FMAP, Federal Medical Assistance Program, namely Medicaid. So how much is coming to Maryland? I don't know. Hard to say. Depends on what ultimately comes out in the new president's package. If it's a $100 billion traditionally and it just goes on a per capita formula, we could stand to benefit from that to the tune of about $2 billion. Is that over 1 year period of time, or is it spread out over two? Can't tell you. Haven't seen any legislation, and I don't know what Senate's going to do to it. Will it be adjusted in such a way so that New York and California, that did not make the tough decisions we made in time before this recession hit, will more of that be flexed to them in a sort of big state, small state thing? I don't know. So what do you put into the budget that has to go in next week? That's what we're trying to figure out, too. Responsibly, how much do we assume then, if we have to make an intellectually honest effort at putting before the General Assembly a balanced budget? Is it $200 million this year? Is it $600 million? Is it $300 million? And that's what you'll see once we do our budget rollout. But it is a big part of the relief. If we are able, President Obama and the new Democratic Congress is able to secure more dollars than we are anticipating in the budget that we present, then we will be able to avoid some of the very difficult layoffs that are in the budget as it's currently being introduced.
Thank you, Governor.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, I'm Tom Von Stein. I'm a member of the ACLU in Maryland, and one of our current issues is the issue of spying on our citizens. There's no law which prevents the state police from spying on you or me or other residents. And when this question was raised in the last hour, Senator Miller indicated that there was no bill from you as yet on this issue.
There will be.
Okay. And the ACLU, of course, is ready, willing, and able to work with you and help you on that.
Thank you.
And in your other role as on the executive side, we note that you are in charge of the state police, and we urge you to tell them to do the right thing and not be so, not fight the right thing so much as they are doing. So you're saying now that you will introduce legislation to address the spying program.
Yes, I am.
We congratulate you for appointing Stephen Sachs, but new things keep coming out.
Well, can I address that a little bit here? And we could do a whole show on this.
We will.
Good. Okay. I hope to come back. The new things that are coming out because of our respect for people's privacy rights and because we did not Xerox the pages that we're making available and give them to the public when people were falsely and improperly labeled as suspected terrorists when they should not have been. And it is their choice, as private citizens, as it is your choice and your organization's choice as the ACLU, to package these discovery materials as they are delivered and to present them to the post as new material as yet never discovered or known. But I think it is false to say that these activities are that new information is coming out that shows these activities were wider, broader, deeper than the very good and sound and honest report that General Sachs gave to the public at my request on this matter. These incidents, they've been. You're going to do another show on it. I know we have other people waiting, but the other policy question coming up, to a higher level here, is that no amount of magnetic wanding, no amount of metal detection can be as great a safeguard against the threat of terrorism and this new asymmetrical warfare that we're going to be dealing with and our children and grandchildren will be dealing with. Nothing is as important in our protection as sound, good, timely, accurate intelligence. And so the challenge that presents to us is, the old quandary of a people that's willing to give up their liberty for their security deserves neither. So we have to find a way to protect our people. Police have to find better ways to share and more accurate ways to share information. But we also have to be very protective of the rights and the reputations of people. And I look forward to working with the ACLU. I hope you'll support the legislation as we introduce it. I'm not sure that we're introducing it today. Maybe Christine can tell me when we're talking about that one. But it will be in accordance with what General Sachs said. And his report, I think, is a great testament to the spirit and the values of our state. And if anyone hasn't read it, I urge you to.
And we will be following up on this.
It won't cost a nickel.
We have to relate to other
right. Thank you.
I apologize because there's so many people waiting to
ask you really
a question.
Doing a show on that?
Yes, we are.
Oh,
absolutely.
Good. Get me back on it. Maybe you can get the former governor on it since it happened under him.
Who would that? The former governor? Well, I do want to ask him that question. I want to ask just how much. We don't know just how far up the chain it went in spying on our citizens. I think we deserve to know that answer.
Does the ACLU know that it happened under him?
I think they do.
Okay, good.
Hi.
Kind of giving him a free pass. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Cindy Schwartz, and I'm the executive director for the Maryland League of Conservation Voters. First, Governor, I want to commend you on the state's move to purchase two large tracts of land through the program Open Space and your commitment to continue to fund that. We really greatly appreciate that, so thank you very much.
Thank you for noticing.
Pardon?
I say thank you for noticing.
We notice that, and we notice actually a lot more. You're doing a great job, and I think you're going to leave a great legacy for protecting the environment. It's my understanding that Attorney General Doug Gansler is going to be asking the General Assembly to consider a bill to expand the right of citizens and nonprofits to defend their environmental rights in court. It's also known as standing, something that's been debated for a number of years in the General Assembly. Presently, 44 states in the nation have federal government have a broader, more inclusive standard. Do you support adopting a federal standard here in Maryland?
Yeah, I probably would. It's not part of our package. I have not yet seen what the Attorney General's proposing, but it would seem that if 44 states and even the federal government has broader standing guidelines than we do, that it's probably an area where we need to catch up.
That's what we think. Thank you.
Thank you. Standing. That was the first applause of the whole evening. Morning. Excuse me.
Next question.
Good morning. I'm Maria Allwine, co-chair of the Maryland Green Party. I'm with the Maryland Coalition for BGE Reregulation, as well as the Pledge of Resistance Baltimore, both of which have been spied on by the Maryland State Police. So I'm looking forward to some good legislation on that issue this year. My question this morning is about BGE and the issue of reregulation. Governor, given that, first of all, you campaigned on a promise to stop the rate hikes.
Promised that I would fight to stop the rate cuts.
Okay.
I don't have a magic wand either. Some fights I win, some fights I lose.
Well,
I fight every day for the people of our state, and I am proud of the fact that we were able to recover $2 billion from BGE, and you can roll your eyes at it if you like, but it is a larger settlement than has ever been recovered from any utility company in the United States of America, and I'm going to continue to fight. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your question.
That's okay, but Governor O'Malley, the fact remains that the people of Maryland are paying some of the highest utility rates under the deregulation. Now, several states have re-regulated. Illinois got $1 billion in rate concessions from its deregulated utility, Ameren, because of gubernatorial leadership and the willingness of the governor and the General Assembly to pressure that utility to threaten it with deregulation. So my question for you is, given that we are all the legislators and you are concerned about the middle class, the working poor, and the poor who cannot pay these rates, what concrete steps are you going to take this year to address the utility rates themselves, to address the rates that Constellation BGE charges for its utilities? We are all suffering, and we cannot continue like this.
Well,
thank you, Maria.
This could be another topic of an entire show.
It will be.
I'm filling my dance card with Mark Steiner appearances. I think that what we, you know, there has been a report that just came out that the Public Service Commission had been working on for the better part of a year, looking at the pros and cons of re-regulation. If we were to go to some forms of re-regulation, and everybody had to pay more for it, I think you would agree that that was probably a bad move. So what we have to figure out is how we move forward, acknowledging that deregulation has brought no price relief for consumers. How do we move forward into the future with more price stability, more price regularity, and some greater countermeasure in this freewheeling, free market system that is actually publicly controlled, that is working in the public interest? Some have suggested that publicly regulated and publicly controlled peaking units, since that is what drives a big part of the rates that we pay, you know, peaking when the demand is at its greatest for 30 to, you know, 45 days of the year, that is the way to go. So these will be issues that we'll have to be working with the Senate and the House and the Public Service Commission to address. We're probably heading towards somewhat of a hybrid system in Maryland, with greater emphasis on some publicly controlled or publicly regulated peaking units on the regulated side of the market that's out there. So I wish I had the clear, you know, answer to this. It's different in virtually every state, and with a new president, we might actually have a national energy policy, and then it would become a little easier to know what the right thing is. Johnson once said, it's easy to do the right thing. Sometimes it's real hard to figure out what the right thing is, and this is a complicated issue, but we're doing our very best with it, and I am proud of the professionalism of the Public Service Commission.
Do we, as a follow-up to that, do we, three things very quickly, so I want to get back to our audience here. Do we try to re-regulate the industry as it was before the deregulation took place, which was working fine before they took the caps off?
I'm not sure it was working great before they took
the caps off. All right, you can respond to that. One of the big issues is rolling brownouts are going to take place by 2011 in the state of Maryland, and if not before, and how do we find the money to invest in ensuring that? And should things like BGE, if it's spun off, become a public utility rather than a privately owned utility?
Well, here's the thing. When we say should companies become publicly, I think we sometimes mix up our semantics, and I'm not I don't claim to be a, you know, energy attorney. But the, you know, when we say publicly controlled versus publicly regulated, I mean, there's a huge difference. If all of us here as citizens of our state were to decide that we're going to run our utility and our electric, you know, generation companies, that would be a huge expense that would be greatly in excess of our annual state budget or even a couple of annual state budgets, and the PSC addresses some of that. I think what we're talking about is trying to find a free market counterbalance that is acting in the public's interest with the motive, not a profit, but a price stabilization. And that's what we have to figure out how to do, Mark. Keep in mind also that many of these plants, I mean, it's for as much progress as we've made as a people, most electricity is still made by powering a turbine with what? With coal. In our state, about 60% of it was coal. So when we flick on the light, that is coal. That it's 60% of it is making it go. And all of those things, because of the stuff we've passed, Clean Air Act and the things we're able to enforce, all of those things have much higher regulatory costs because of the environmental remediation that they're putting on the scrubbers and the like. And that would be a cost then that all of us would bear moving forward too. So this is addressed in the Public Service Commission report on this. And you have to look at the pros and cons. It's almost like if the new cars that are coming out get three times the gas mileage as cars today, do you really want to take ownership over that car that's 7 years old when there's new things coming out that are much more efficient and much more cost-effective? And so think of it the same way when it comes to power generation. There are some vehicles of power generation that are really old, that burn a lot, that are really dirty, and that have big costs for repair. And there's newer things coming out, like the new technology and nuclear energy, that we could actually benefit from because we're further down the road with that than many other states.
We will. This clearly will be an entire hour or more on our show to debate.
That's great.
This
I like the shows that actually last an hour. This stuff's hard.
It's really hard.
There are not easy answers.
Because we went to new energy, we can maybe stop our sister state of West Virginia from tearing off mountaintops and destroying the states and ruining people's lives. We'll see. Sir.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question, Governor. My name's Ted Weber. I live here in Annapolis. Given that polls show that 90% of Maryland voters support program open space to protect land from sprawl development, and that preserving open space actually saves the state and county's money in terms of expenditures and impacts, will you keep your promise not to divert program open space funds from the real estate transfer tax?
Yes, and that was actually a promise I did make. And there's a couple others, too. Under the category of bad things that we're not doing anymore, now that the O'Malley Brown administration is in office, one of them is that we are not diverting funds from the Transportation Trust Fund just to plug the current day budget holes and get us into the next election. The other thing that they used to do regularly before the O'Malley Brown administration was to take dollars from program open space. Anthony Brown and I regard program open space dollars as not really our dollars in the highest sense that we can understand them. Those are dollars that belong to the next generation. And we have agreed as a people, and we understand as Marylanders that, we are one Maryland, and while we have a responsibility to each other in the here and now, we also bear a very heavy responsibility to the next generation and grandkids that are as yet unborn that we may never even meet. And so we are using every dollar of program open space for program open space. And there are some, and they honestly believe, there are some in the minority party. I know the minority leader of the Senate has been very critical and says we should use open space funds to plug the budget. And we respectfully disagree. And we're much more of the mind of that great Republican president, Theodore Roosevelt, who said that we must constantly be on guard against a concerted minority of the present who would try to rob the legacy and the heritage of the future. So we're going to continue to use our open space dollars for open space. And everybody, do yourselves a favor. You'll feel good and you'll feel hopeful and optimistic about what we can do together in order to save the Bay and our piece of this planet. Go online to Maryland Green Print. It is on the Maryland website. It is the first in the nation map online, GIS technology, that goes down to the parcel-by-parcel level and gives an ecological ranking to every parcel in the state of Maryland. You can see in your own county how much open space has been preserved and how much minimum needs to be preserved for all times so that this ecological body, if you will, of the Chesapeake Bay in Maryland will have a sufficient amount of green lungs, green liver, green kidney in order to be able to continue to thrive and function. And I appreciate your fighting for this, and this is a good fight. This defines who we are as a people, and I think Jim Clark would be proud of the strides we've made. So keep advocating for it, though.
Thank you very much, Governor.
Thank you.
Governor, to continue that, before we get to our next question or come up to the mic, is that The Maryland Climate Change Commission made some recommendations, 25% below 2006 levels, and they want to take it all the way up to 90% by 2050, 2006 levels. And the reduction of greenhouse gases. And it's a huge battle here between, in some ways, environmentalists and people in unions who are terrified for their jobs and think, okay, can we have a clean environment and keep me employed and getting these things passed. So this and the push for cleaner technology in Maryland are two of the most important things we can do beyond things like open space, maybe even more important to some levels. So where is that? Tell us about that in terms of this year's session.
That bill came very, very close to passing.
Very close.
In the last session. And union leaders, labor leaders, and environmental advocates and the clean air advocates have been working closely over the course of this last year. And we had a talk about that very issue, Mark, namely the division between two groups that usually are on the same side of issues. And I urge them to please find a way to work this out, find a One Maryland way to figure out a compromise that moves us towards our goals and also keeps the coalition here together. And I think we're very, very close to doing that. It's an interesting thing about goals. If you don't have them, you make no progress whatsoever. Then again, if you create goals without any interim steps along the way, a line of trajectory, if you will, to hold each other accountable for whether we're actually making progress towards that goal, then it doesn't mean anything. We saw that in the Chesapeake Bay goals. Terrific. People in 2000 make a commitment to goals that we won't know whether or not we hit or even move towards until 2010. That's not the way the real world works. So I think we may have crafted a way that labor leaders and environmentalists will be able to jointly support a piece of legislation that accomplishes the goals of the climate change reduction and may well even be a national model.
Sir, question?
Yeah. Thanks. My name is Tommy Landers with Environment Maryland. Governor, thanks for holding our questions today. And I wanted to thank you, first of all, for all your leadership on those discussions between the unions, environmentalists, and other groups. It's been a great process, and thanks
Good.
For getting that
well,
started.
Well, thank you guys. I mean, I can kind of pull us together, but you have to find the common ground, and I appreciate how hard you all worked on that.
Yeah, well, it's been a great process.
Good.
And also, thank you for all your great initiatives last year on energy, renewable energy, energy efficiency, conservation, all great stuff. And I just wanted to get some of your thoughts on the future of clean energy jobs, clean energy businesses here in Maryland with the Maryland Clean Energy Center about to start. Obama has said he wants to double alternative energy in the next 3 years. It's all very exciting and I think a real ray of light in these darker economic times. So I'd like to know what your thoughts are on that for the future in Maryland.
I think the tremendous opportunities. You know, doing what we've been doing for another 30 years might mean that we don't have a planet anymore. So clearly we have to change. I mean, the survival imperative is there, so let's make the best of it, right? And let's use it to create new opportunities and new technologies and green jobs. Beyond this climate change agreement that we've are this close to with union leaders, the next horizon is that I need you all to figure out how we come up with a strategy to make us a leader in the creation of green jobs. What is a green job? President-elect Obama also said that he wants 75% of government buildings to be energy efficient. Great goal. How do we get there, and what are the job skills that we need for this? We upgraded our renewable portfolio standards to 20%. We have opportunities with an RFP coming out for sort of a joint buying and long-term contracts with University of Maryland system and also with the state. The Blue Wind, what's it called? Is it Blue Water? No, Blue Water. They should call it Blue Wind. It's blue water off of the coast of Delaware with the wind project there is an opportunity. You're going to do a whole show. I really hope you have chunk of that. And speaking of trajectories and wedge analyses, MEA, there's two big fronts. One is we have to ramp up our portion of renewables, and we also have to pull down the amount of overall consumption. And that's what we need to do in a daily, weekly, monthly basis, and it'll be exciting.
It's a good thing your press office is here, so we'll sit and talk with them before we go to start setting these schedules up to get you on for these hour-long shows. Two quick questions here before we run out of time completely. Social issues may be some of the largest battles in the state legislature this year. Let's take two very quickly. If you can do this in a couple of minutes, it would be great. I should have done it early with you. I apologize. Death penalty, and whether you're going to lobby to end the death penalty in the state of Maryland as governor of the state of Maryland, and B, there will be clear arguments going on about gay marriage and gay rights and the rights of people to have of same-sex to have the same rights as heterosexual couples in the state of Maryland. So first, death penalty. Are you going to lobby and fight to have that end?
I did last session, and I will again this session. And we're also, as we benefited on that on the question of proper police tactics from General Sachs, former U.S. Attorney General Civiletti did a tremendous service in the Death Penalty Commission that had been worked all year, and it's a very well-done piece of work, and I commend it to all of you here and everyone listening to go online and read it. I believe, Mark, that over the long term, the death penalty is inconsistent with a country that's founded on the principle that each of us is created equal in God's eyes and equal protection under the law. I mean, ultimately, the founding principle of this republic is the dignity of every individual. And I believe, therefore, that the death penalty is, over the long term, inconsistent with that principle, and one day there will come a time when it does not exist in any state. I believe that in our state we are very close to being able to repeal the death penalty. We did not succeed in that last year. I hope we will be more successful this year. On the issue of equal marital rights for gay couples, I believe that the room for consensus and the room for compromise and the room and the way forward on that is civil unions. But no doubt that issue will be debated. And the city council, you'll recall that I was a lead sponsor of a bill that extended domestic partnership benefits under the city's health insurance. I believe that our state needs to take a look at that as well. And so, you know, we'll roll with it as they come.
I'd like to thank Governor Martin O'Malley, Speaker of the House of Delegates Michael Bush, and Senate President Mike Miller for joining us here today at Phillips Seafood Restaurant in Annapolis. Over the past 2 hours, discuss what the citizens of Maryland can expect from our lawmakers over the next 90 days. If you missed any of the broadcast, it's available online at www.steinershow.org, and we broadcast tonight on WEAA from 5 to 7 p.m. Thanks to the Maryland State Teachers Association for their generous sponsorship to make this event possible. Thanks to Maryland ACLU and Maryland Healthcare for All Coalition for helping us make this event a success. Thanks to WEAA 88.9 FM for their support in broadcasting this event as our home station. This event was produced by Jessica Phillips and Justin Levy. Our engineer is Zachary Coleman. We're indebted to our intern, Christina Aronson, our executive director, Claire Gorman, Valerie Williams, and Marcella Shepard, the bassman from WEA, for helping us out this morning and making this a success. And thanks to our audience, including students from the Baltimore Freedom Academy, the Praise Academy, St. John's College, and Morgan State University, who got up very early this morning to join us here in Annapolis for this important conversation on the future of our state. And for Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.